we're speaking about, you know, it sounds very bigoted, or a better word. We opened a door. We already finished basically the main mitzvahs of the Seder. We're at the end. And we say, Hashem, pour out your wrath on the non-Jewish nations. I mean, that doesn't sound so nice. What do you want from the poor guys? Like, what do you want from their life? So, there's two points that we need to consider. Firstly, Eliyahu HaNavi, he has a few functions. His main function, really, is bring us towards Mashiach. That means that when a person... I'm working on something. I'm working on understanding something. I don't understand it at all. I don't know what it means. I'm working on it. And when something comes in, now I get it. That could be a level of Elio. I got a little bit of this little light of prophet. It gives me a little awe. There were people who got a much higher level. But on a simple level, you get this little spark. That's Elio. So he's helping us along all the way. That's his job. Bring Mashiach. Same thing with interpersonal relationships. Sometimes I get a little... I can just see things in a broader way. I can make up with someone, and even though it was hard. And that's also part of this aspect of Eliyahu HaNavi, especially when it comes to family things. Father's heart to the child to the father. That's what he does. So Eliyahu's function is to pave the way for Mashiach through the centuries. So what that means is two things. First of all, when Mashiach comes, there's going to be a great clarification. That's going to be that's an expression of judgment. That's this aspect of the wrath comes out. It's Hashem for the Jewish people. You know, we notice that even today, and certainly earlier, there's a lot of we bear a lot. People are not that happy very often for no reason. It's like beyond belief. I have a friend who's in the South, and he comes from the South. I think he's a Ger actually, and you know, he came back to the South. He's driving his car. He had to go home, wherever it was. And he has a big skull cap, you know, shyamaka. And he has his tzitzis. And this gentleman who was in the gas station, who was pumping the gas, says, "Where's your horns?"
Exactly.
He doesn't have any doubt that the guy's got horns. The only question is, where are they? So he said, "I left him in the car." And as he drove out, he went, beep, beep. You know, but like, he's got a good sense of humor. But, we have a lot to bear in terms of people having these crazy ideas about what we're about, who we are. There's a strange double standard when it comes to Jews. Suddenly it's, you know, we try to point it out. It's a little bit strange. We look around the world and, we don't care what people who are not Jewish are doing. Pretty much, if you're Jewish, you have a different standard. It's very, very true. That's just, we bear a lot. So, we have a lot on our head. Eliyahu HaNavi makes sure that no matter how much people may hate us, and again, in the Western world, very often it's very benign. It's usually often not so bad. I mean, you say, well, would you kill him? Would you hurt him? We don't want him to hurt. I mean, I think most people would say, no, I don't want anyone to hurt. Just these guys are not so good. Whatever they say, their whole whatever they believe. But like, I think most people are not looking to physical harm. You wouldn't celebrate. So some Jew died. Great. Yes. Let's drink cheers. I mean, most people, hopefully, that's not where they're holding. Used to be, maybe they were. But today, I don't think that's in the Western world. There are other nations that, I'm not so sure. I think, unfortunately, they would celebrate. They would say, great, more Jews killed. Excellent. Let's give out candy. And there are nations like that. So Hashem pours his wrath on them. Suddenly, they're fighting with each other. They have their own problems in their own countries. And they just can't get it together to make a concerted effort to kill us, or that'll work. So that's one meaning, just in the interim for now, for this year. If Mashiach, we hope Mashiach will come from last year. Mashiach didn't come from last year until this year. So what are we saying, this pour out your wrath? We don't even mention Mashiach because we need this aspect of judgment to protect us from enemies who would do anything to eradicate us. And even in this modern age, we have plenty of them, unfortunately. Although I hope the Western world is not in a place, and hope they won't get to a place where it's like, well, actually, I would celebrate if some Jew died. That's great. You know, I hope that's not where people are their direction. It's not so clear.
Uh-huh, yes.
Yeah, I know. There are people who say it's already there long ago, my friend, and people may be denying it. They're lying. I hope it's not. I don't know. I could just mention something I heard in the name of Shlomo Carbach, and he said he was a very practical man who understood people. And he said, you know, if you go around feeling a lot of hatred for people who might be real bigots, and they might hate your guts, I mean, all you're going to do is multiply the hatred. It's better to try to, like, diminish it. And I think that's a good advice. That's good advice.
I'm just wondering whether all the anti-Semitism that you're mentioning is also a way of Hashem motivating us to make Aliyah.
Definitely it is. And to make Aliyah also in the Nefesh, like to try to be a little bit better and remember Hashem. You know, you're Jewish, like it or not. You know, in Hitler's regime, they didn't care. They didn't care where you went. They don't care if you converted. And I don't care even if your father was Jewish 2 generations ago. You have a drop of Jewish blood, you're tainted.
Yep.
It's over. We don't care. Mm-hmm. You're tainted. We don't care. They were more stringent than the Rabbanut. The Rabbanut has all sorts of different... They're very stringent. Everyone knows they're impossible. But Hitler, I mean, he was much worse. He was like, no, all these guys, you have to worry, suspect that they're Jewish. You have to get the whole... that's where people are holding. They're saying, I want to... You know, they reminded many secular Jews that you are Jewish. It's unbelievable that before Hitler came to power, people were saying... The answer to anti-Semitism is to be more assimilated. Yeah. And yet, after he came to power, the assimilation was not a factor. I don't care how assimilated you are. I don't care if you got medals in World War I, being the best soldier in the world. We're going to go after you like you're a roach because you're Jewish. And we'll do it in a sophisticated way, and we'll do it if it'll work. We'll be realistic, 2 feet on the ground. We're not going to be crazy about it. But when we have power, if we're able, we'll kill you. Yeah. And I don't care anything. I just don't care about anything. It doesn't make a difference to me. And they're not the only people. I mean, again, this is happening. It's not only the Nazis that were an anomaly. Even, you know, communists also. When the communists and the white and the reds were fighting, mm-hmm. the czar and the communists, who's going to have supremacy, every time someone won a battle in any town, one of the first questions was, do we have to kill the spies? Well, who are the spies?
Of course, the Jews.
Obviously, the Jews, yeah. That was the... So it doesn't matter white and red. Well, red said you're communist. The white said you're czar. The white said you're communist. The red said you're czar supporters. You guys are dead. So there was one town, there were maybe 300 Jews, and they're lining them up as usual, about to kill them. And they had one pharmacist who was married to a non-Jewish. And, you know, he had his family and his life. And he said, you know, well, he was Jewish, though. I mean, from birth. And as they're about to shoot the Jewish population, he said, wait a minute. I'm also Jewish. If you're deciding just based on arbitrarily that any Jew is a spy, any Jew is in favor of the bad guys, whoever the bad guys are, from whoever perspective, well, I'm Jewish too. You got to take me too. They said, that's great. You can line up to him. We have an extra bullet. Not a problem. But the townsfolk were a little upset. They're like, wait. He's the only pharmacist. Who's going to take care of our medicines? So now they're in a quandary. What do we do? We can't not shoot him because he's a pharmacist. I mean, that's so bogus and lies. I mean, like, if he's a spy, then kill him. And if you tell me he's not a spy, but he's a Jew, but maybe the other guys aren't spies either. It's not like we have any evidence. We're just assuming that Jews are no good, and Jews are this, and Jews are that. So they were very confused. They made a meeting, and they said, you know what, just leave them alone. Don't kill them. He saved everybody's life, 300 people's life. Just saying, I'm also a Jew, take me too. By being so completely like, okay. So it woke him up. The special treatment woke him up, and that's good. That's great. So number one, we're saying, you know, you have to pour out, we're hoping Hashem will send Eliyahu, pour out his wrath. Hashem will pour out his wrath on the nations, and that means any of our enemies can't come after us, can't eradicate us, can't destroy us. Not going to work that way. They're just going to be too busy somehow, some way, too busy. And that's the way it always is. They're just too busy. They just can't get it together. That's what we're really asking for. If you want to kill us, so Hashem will give you a little drink of wrath, and it'll somehow, I mean, we don't say kill them, we don't say, we just say Hashem pour out his wrath, no, that's what we want. And they're like, you know, you guys need to be busy with something. I don't know what. They do good things. We don't care what. Just, you know, character building, I don't know what, whatever it may be, anything in the world, you know, facing up to your problems and going to your therapist. I don't care, but find something else to do besides your hobby of wanting
or
to kill the
hurricanes.
Yeah, we don't. Oh well, no, that's a different. That's on a worse level. We're not hoping. The whole time there was an earthquake in China, and lots of people were killed. You know, 100 years ago. And the whole time said, "So what does this earthquake tell you?" He said to someone, "The guy, I don't care. What is it to me?" Okay. The whole time said, "What are you talking about? I mean, I have a question for you. If you hear somebody." He wants to speak Yiddish because he wants to speak to a Jewish fellow, and this Jewish fellow is among other people. He speaks Yiddish. Nobody else understands Yiddish. I mean, you're the only Jew there. You won't figure that. I mean, who's he talking to? So come on, he's talking to me. How do you know? It's because I'm the only one who knows the language. He says the same thing. When Hashem makes an earthquake, the only one who knows the language is us. So he's sending us a message. So yeah, why do these people die? That Hashem understands, and there's a reason. It's not for nothing, for sure. I mean, Rabbi Nachman is very clear. Non-Jewish lives have a purpose. They're doing something. They're not. It's not like, you know, they are human beings. It's not. We have to be like very, very. People are. I don't know. They're somehow very strange. A very strange result of so many centuries of hatred that we had to bear is a strange mentality of like they're after me. Like, you know, going to 7-Eleven. Maybe the person he or she's after me. Like, come on, like relax. Just, you know, get your drink. Don't be, you know, be polite. Be a person. Be a mensch. Don't make a chil Hashem. Don't, you know, if people feel like these are your boys. They're so or whoever they are. This guy's Jewish. And he's some kind of a. He's like chorus. He's like, that's not good. That's very not good. And it's sad people don't understand this. But there's a purpose for them too. But the only one who's going to get it is us. So we have to get a message. What's Hashem trying to shake us up? Wake us up. Wake up. So the hurricane angel land is really for us more than for them. There's some purpose for them too, but it's for us. That Hashem's sending us a message. Hello. Wake up. Listen for a minute. You got to start to move. If you don't move, you don't get a little inner movement, you're going to be in big trouble. Not so good. And trouble, I mean, it's like really strange because you say, well, Hashem, if you just leave me alone in my physical life, it's going to be okay. And really, the opposite is true. If Hashem's leaving us alone in our life, it's really going to be not okay. That's not good. We want to be somehow woken up, somehow. In a good way, not, God forbid, a bad way. But in a good way, we want to be woken up. So that's part of what that is about. What does that mean? So I think we're going to start the Ben Ish Chai. So we'll do that with a little bit of a chassidut. I don't even know if I'm going to bother reading the Hebrew. I may just say it in English. Take when I have one more, so I only have one. It's all good, I guess. Let's see, after the Shmaya. So we're trying to learn a little bit of what's behind the halacha. Now, the first thing that we need to know, we learn a shiur like this, we understand we're trying to learn a little bit of what is behind the halacha, what's this teaching name. God willing, we'll learn very beautiful, inspiring ideas that based on the details of the halacha, each detail. The first thing we need to know is we will have no idea anyway. That's the first thing we have to know. Like the Shlach Kodesh said, he said, you can live 1,000 years and research with every free available instant one mitzvah, and you will not have scratched the surface 1,000 years. So we don't really understand what's going on. The mitzvahs, we don't know what's flying. We don't know. We don't understand. But we don't know. That's the way it is. That's how it goes. But
where?
Tzav. So we don't know. But we have the little we know is also very good. But we don't. It's not like this is what's the mitzvah about. And some people say, well, if that's what it is, and if this case, then that doesn't apply, or it does apply. I mean, that's part of the problem. Rav Nachman was very against Mor Nevuchim.
I'm very against.
It's called the Guide for the Perplexed. Rav Nachman was very against learning this Sefer, even though it's the Rambam, in Maimonides. And he said, listen, I mean, it's going to really get you in trouble. It's going to make your Judaism become dry. not good. You're going to get confused from it. I mean, it was the Beis HaLevi, once saw his son, Rav Chaim Brisker, learning the Mordechai. He said, this book's title is The Guide for the Perplexed. Do you feel perplexed? He said, no, I actually don't. So why are you reading it? It has nothing to do with you. It wasn't written for you. It was written for someone who's going to be perplexed. That's one point to realize. And another point, and maybe this is even more powerful, and then the third point which I want to get to, which is the Chofetz Chaim. He saw his son learning The Guide for the Perplexed. He said, listen, we don't learn this book. Okay, thank you, Dad. Very good, put it away. Next week, he sees again he's learning it. He said, I already told you, it's not appropriate to learn this book. It's not for you. Thank you so much. The third time he sees it, he didn't say anything, he just takes the book. Now, it's not like today. Today, to take a book, see another 50 shekels, get another 100 shekels. In those years, a book was like, it was a big deal. You lost your book, you're done. Next year, maybe you can afford another one to find it, even if you have the money. So forget it. They were poor. So it was impossible. Like, that was the end. He shut it for him. It's like you disconnected him from the net and he can't get back on. It's impossible. You're in Sahara. I have the only kid, only way. You know, impossible. So it's impossible. So he said, why'd you take it away from me? He said, I already told you it's not for you. He said, I don't understand. I mean, it's my mother. He's the Rambam. What could be wrong with the Rambam? He said, I want to tell you one of his famous parables. I'll tell you a little story you'll understand. Once there was a child whose father was carrying him on his shoulders. And they're walking, and they're going here, and they're going there. And the father hears a child on his shoulders say, wait a minute, does my father exist? Is he carrying me? And he gets so upset. What do you mean, do I exist? You're on my shoulders. Hello. He said, when you have a vibrating... Yeah.
The child is on the shoulders.
The shoulders. And then the child starts to contemplate, starts to say to himself, does my father exist? Is he carrying me? What do you mean, do I exist? You're on my shoulder. What is this, a joke? Yeah. He said, when you have a vibrant Emuna, this is just going to get you, wait, is it this, is it that? I mean, you're on his shoulders. Hello, what's the question? That was what he said. It kind of gets in your way. I mean, it's a combination of three elements. You have some ethical direction, which is very beautiful. The very first Ramah in Shulchan Aruch is based on a piece from Ornavuchim. There are other pieces also that are just powerful, most are beautiful ideas, which no one would object to in and of themselves. Then you have reasons for mitzvahs, what's behind the mitzvah. Now this, also they bring here, they bring there. Some things are maybe a little weaker, some things maybe a little stronger. Okay, that's all, whatever the way is. And then you have this philosophical approach. That's maybe the third segment, the third portion of what he's doing in the book. So together it's a lethal combination because you start to think that the main thing is ethics, and I understand really what's behind the mitzvah, and the main thing is my intellectual, and then you like, so I like, as one person I met said, well, so why should I wear tefillin if this is what tefillin's about? I'll do that myself, or I won't. I mean, you know, like, that's not a good situation. Tefillin's doing incredible things, has nothing to do with what Rambam says. It's true, that's one little drop of what tefillin is, but never, you should never think that this is it. Like, that's what the Shlosh says. I'm going to say a lot of reasons for mitzvah. Don't suspect me of giving you even a drop of what's really going on, because I can't do it even if I lived my whole life and I was focused on one mitzvah, and it's a very, very long life. It wouldn't matter. Fine.
Well, Hashim, people forget why Rambam wrote the book. It was for a specific reason at a specific time,
mm-hmm.
where that Greek and Arab philosophy had swept everything,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to tell people there's an alternative. Then use that as a step to get them out of philosophy at all.
Absolutely, undoubtedly. And you reminded me actually. Oh, I was saying another thing.
Because of that book, the French Balei Tosfot burned books of Rambam.
Oh, uh-huh, that's its own.
That was the basis of the entire.
Of course.
Hitnagdut to Rambam.
No, that was I heard. I didn't see inside. Now this is an important point, which is that I heard this again. I haven't yet seen this. I heard from my uncle. He was pretty. Careful with sources. He wasn't somebody who was a pushover. He was very real. But he said that they burned the Mordechai and they burned the Halacha Sefer also. Mm-hmm. So, and then, not too long after that, the non-Jewish authorities burned the Talmud. And Rabbeinu Yonah...
With Balei Tosfot.
During the time of Tosfot. I don't know if there was...
No, they killed the...
They killed them too.
They burned them along with the books.
I don't know.
My wife grew up there.
Could be. I don't know. I was saying
in the history of the French.
I admit I plead ignorance. I just know for sure they burned the Talmud, and maybe there were several burnings of the Talmud. I know that they killed quite a few Ballytoastful just kind of arbitrarily, like out of, as usual.
What time period was this?
Ballytoastful?
1400s or something? No, it was early 1300s.
After the right two generations after Rashi.
Yeah.
Rabbi Tam was one of the Ballytoastful.
Yes, I know. No, I know.
It was two generations after Rashi.
He was killed too. If I remember right, he was killed too. There was a whole bunch that were just killed
some
off.
Some of them they burned at the stake along with the Talmudim.
Well, this I wasn't aware
in
of.
In the courtyard of the, what's it called, the municipality of Paris. And they're still there in the flooring, a design showing where it was done.
Really?
A big Chanukiah.
Well, we're proud of it, of course. Shem Yishmor. Shem to protect from such craziness. But the Rabbeinu Yonah said the reason for this decree was, again, this is how I heard from my uncle. I haven't found this inside.
Mm-hmm.
We don't mind. The Vonavuchim needed to be burned. We should have burned the Vonavuchim for plague, but burning the halakhic guide was way over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a mistake. And they got it. Will you burn this? No, this is kosher. So the other one, yeah, burn it. That's what I heard. I wasn't able to find it inside. I was able to find the inside that he said because we burned the Rambam's works. That's why. That, I did find the site. But I didn't find anywhere that said the differentiation that Mordechai would be okay. I don't know.
The yeshiva of the Balei Tosfot, that's on the one of the banks of the Seine River, go through it, is now the central police station.
Really?
After they burned down the yeshiva, they built a central police station there.
Fascinating.
And it's next to, and also they built next to it, the major church in Paris. Mm. Well, with like, looks like a cooling tower, on top of a cooling tower.
I'm sure it's an interesting place to visit for people, tourists who are interested in such things.
It shows what the otzma of what they did, what it turns out to. It's like with near Beitar, there's an Arab village called Nachlin.
Mm-hmm.
In Nevi'im, there was a Nevi, Ido, a Nevi. In his days, Nachlin was a Jewish village.
Mm-hmm.
It was originally a Jewish town, but they accepted Nevi Sheker, and he cursed that village because he said, "Gosh, it'll be destroyed, and over there, the Zabu will live there instead."
Right.
And now you have Lavni, our big Arab village. So it's like that because they did what they did, the yeshiva turned into a police station, and next was a major church, and Chemeshem.
Makes sense. I don't know, heavenly. It makes sense.
It sort of fits.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very strong
coincidence.
It's sad. It's sad that and that day people were proud of burning people at the stake and like, you know, whatever. This is to us, really. Are you kidding, right? This is like a real religion. I mean, come on. Like, we can't even relate. Killing someone? They wrote manuals on how to torture people. Manuals like
the Inquisition
manuals, like,
started in France. Not in Spain. It started in France, and they exported it to Spain.
So it's 1460s?
No, it was earlier than that.
That's why the Ballytoastful
was before the Inquisition.
They were
going
out. Yeah, no, but... True.
Maybe.
I don't know. Again, I'm not
sure. So that was around the time of the Crusades, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Crusades were also a hard time for Jewish people.
Well, she died because of sorrows, what was doing to the Jewish people. He wrote it himself.
So the Gra, I heard, I also didn't hear this inside, I think I heard it from Rav Maimon on one of the few tapes I heard of his, they're great tapes. He said, I should really ask him, like, where, I guess he maybe heard it, I haven't seen it inside. He said that of 1,000 people who've learned the Mor Nevuchim, 999 were not helped, more damaged than helped, and one person was helped. And he said the Breshev Chassidim would say, the 999 we found, that one guy, I don't know, we're still looking. Can't seem to look at him. I mean, that's what they say. Again,
we heard
it. It means a person who's, the person is, he's improving his emuna through the Mordechai. There was a pathway of trying to searching, there's a very strong searching in there, that the word where people said, I learned from the self-searching there in the pursuit of truth, that helped me. But not necessarily that he took the ideas there exactly, but you have to search, you have to look, you have to be real. Okay. So we have to be very careful of the not taking the reasons for mitzvahs we'll learn about here a little bit and take it and saying, well, this is it. This is not it. It's not a little. It's just a little drop. It's something to focus on. The purpose is to try to, when I'm doing a mitzvah, when I'm doing, like, for example, learn about cleaning the house for Pesach, and when I'm doing it, I say, wow, I'm doing amazing things. This is unbelievable. That's what I want to get to. Not so much, this is it. Not this is it. On the contrary, get a little drop. You know, there's like realms out there that I can connect to. I'm connecting to. I just have to.
Then why do some people have it as required reading?
Have what as required reading?
The perplexed.
Again, I would assume.
Because they're perplexed.
Depends which people you're speaking about.
There
are definitely shivot that they learn about the perplexed. I mean, it helps you learn how to think and have critical thinking. If you want to give some critical thinking, you will get it from this work. I mean, it will give them that. It's not going to build the Muna, though. That's the problem. But they say, well, learning the Muna, we don't think of it. We're not learning that way, and I don't know if they're right or wrong. It might depend how you give it over. I don't know. If you give it over in a way, and you're explaining, like, well, this is, I mean, you know, this reason, I don't know about that, you know. The morale off him, he brings it. He's like, the Rambam says this, I don't know. The Mora, he's like, I don't know. That doesn't seem to me too terribly compelling. Like, well, let's look at another reason. So it's like that. And he's like, it's not exactly that. The Rambam says, that's it. That's it. Like, what is he talking about? He's not so, you know, again, he gave like you were saying. I mean, it was apologetics according to many. He was trying to help people get out of it. Like, it was so completely obvious to people that anyone who pursues of light and understanding is involved in philosophy and leaves the Greek philosophy that they were involved in. That it was like, what do you want me to, like, what, like, you got to do something to help these poor people. That was the purpose. Did it? I mean, I had Rosh Yeshiva. He saw someone learning the guy for perplexed, Rav Maslin, and he said, why are you learning that? You're not going to understand it anyway. Like, the philosophy, you're anyway not going to get it. So what's the point? Like, why? So that's also a point. That's also an important point. So that might be part of why some people require it. We had a book of Zionist greats, secular Zionist greats. My wife likes to read a lot of history. Somebody was in the bathroom, and I once opened it, and I hit just the right page, I guess. It tells about a little biography of this guy who you're going to read. Oh, I didn't read, but if you feel like it, you'll read his little his words about Zionism. And it says, he's born in a Hasidic household, grew up and married very young, and then with the help of works of the Rambam especially, decided to like leave everything and went to Vienna, and like just, I was like, oh, the Rambam, I wonder which book. I wonder which book. It's not going to be the Ad Chazaka, it's not going to be the Shmona Prokem on the Rambam, on the Avos, and it's not going to be Pirush Mishnayos. The only thing that's going to do it for this man, it's not going to be Pirush Rambam, it's not the letters, none of that's going to do that. The Mordechai Rucham is the one book that he means. And that might also be why some people really like it, because it equivocates and dries out your mood. If that's what they want, so then great. If I don't want to be too vital and too, you know, real about it, so then it makes you, in a way, not real. In a way, you're real in that you're focusing your mind, but in a way, you're disengaging the real me, like my real mood of who I really am. I mean, Rav Nelson says you can't live without a mood. It's from the Yerushalmi. Nobody lives without a mood. You can never have a friend without a muna. Because maybe this and maybe that. You can never keep a job without a muna. Forget about getting married. You're married. If you have a muna, it's hard enough sometimes for many people to get married. It's like, what do you mean? What's he going to do to me if I get married? I mean, I'm very vulnerable in that one. I'm really, you know, a lot of people running away their whole life. Get married. I'm joking. Take this step. But if you do, it means you had a lot of faith in this person that she's not going to ruin your life. The same the other way. It's a fair trade. She also has to know. So it's like, it's impossible otherwise. You can't possibly. So, Amuna, you don't live with Amuna. You don't invite Amuna. You're not true. You're not being real. You're not true. You can't. Honestly, I mean, I spoke with this lady. She was from communist Russia. And she said, what do you mean? What is this? Why do I have to believe? Who said? What proof? I said, my friend, you've never lived like that in your life. You don't live that way. So why are you pretending now with religion that suddenly becomes only intellect? I mean, that's never how you live. You're married, right? How could you be married? And she did. Like, she's like, oh, I don't really know. Like, because nobody, it's like a double standard. No one ever does it. Nobody ever, you know, I'll never do anything without knowing 100%. I mean, nobody in the world, if it's important enough, you go for it. You do it. You don't say, I feel like, this is what I feel. Who cares what you feel? You have to, only intellect. Forget feelings, right? Well, I don't really live like that ever. I don't ever do that, except for this particular thing, which irks me for certain reasons. Then it's only logic and nothing else. And only my logic also. It's not logic. I mean, logic is right, good enough though. Because also, I mean, like, where did all this come from? Where does all this mean? Well, I don't really know, and I don't really care. Just leave me alone. You know, it's like, you know, so, okay, listen, you're not really being honest. So we can start the Benish Chai. Okay, Halachas Elu Ashaychem Lechaga Peitzach Darki. Okay, I was going to do it just in English. Okay, he says, these halachas that have to do with Pesach, I usually say on Shabbos Hagadol every year. Every year on Shabbos Hagadol, the Benish Chai would give over these halachas we're about to learn, to give us the essentials, the basic essentials of Pesach. Our purpose and goal is to learn a little bit about the deeper meaning, but also to see what the Benish Chai said is the essential. You're supposed to learn the laws of Pesach within 30 days before Pesach. You have to have an idea of what your Passover, what your Pesach is supposed to look like. Well, these are a minimum way maybe, but you get a basic idea of what it's all about, what it means. In the drusha of the day, he said, I usually give an introduction that's very deep, profound introduction that has to do with the parsha or whatever he brings. He said, but here, I mean, Pesach, you know, I just, whatever I want to do, I do. You don't need an introduction to Pesach, probably. Come on, you know. That was his. So he basically just didn't bother writing. It's probably too much to write. So he didn't put everything in. I mean, Rav Nosson explains, why is it called Shabbos HaGadol? Interesting, the great Shabbos. He said, you need to know that every holiday really, really happens because of Shabbos. It's all Shabbos. Shabbos is the source of everything. As the Aruch Haim HaKadosh says, every 6 days that happen is produced from keeping Shabbos. That's it. Sort of Tanakh Kohen says, wait a minute, what about the times when nobody kept Shabbos? So he has two places in the Tzaddik. One place he's like, well, who told you that nobody kept Shabbos anytime? Maybe there was one person. I mean, you had Adam and then Noah, and then he went through a whole thing. Like he says, it's quite possible they did keep Shabbos. And another place he says, it might mean that before the Torah was given, people who were great were able to access this light, this grace, this kindness by Emunah, which is the point of Shabbos. Again, it doesn't mean we say, oh, well, if Emunah is the point of Shabbos, I'll just do some meditation and then I'll drive to the beach on Shabbos. That's not the idea. You know, there are people, you know, as the way some people like it. Well, it's only Emunah, so it's not about just doing a little meditation. You know, it's so meaningful to me. My Tisha B'Av is so meaningful to me now that I don't fast anymore. And I just eat a little bit and think about the Korban. And the next year, I eat a little bit and don't think about the Korban. And the next year, I eat a lot. You know, it's like becomes like a joke, a little bit of a joke. You know, Chas V'Shalom, that's the people give me people, and it's very equivocating. There's deep stuff going on which we don't really know about. And to go playing around with the system, you don't understand. It's not too clever. You have like, it's rocky. You say, well, I'll change this, and I'll do this. And I mean, you don't understand anything about it. This stuff, just stay out of it. You know, just, you know, press the button you were told to press. You do that, and it goes. It does what it needs to do. You can't, you want to say something?
Obeno brings in the Pnei Moran, mm-hmm, that before Matan Torah, people were related to Baal Hashem as behemot, as animals, and because they weren't required to do all the mitzvot in the Torah because they didn't have it yet. So the animals don't, these were on an animal level, they didn't have it. But when the Torah was given, that's when it started being required.
Absolutely. He says that there's an aspect of man.
Mm-hmm.
Man has a merit. He said, otherwise, of course, they're human beings, but a human being is getting freebie, like he's in a stable. And that's he's working on himself, which is possible. Maybe he's not Jewish to work on himself. I mean, the Rambam says, Chassidim HaSa'olim, the Gemara says, if he's a pious person, he's working on his character, he's working on being better, so then maybe he is earning it, it's not so clear. But unfortunately, the general rule is, he's like just getting a freebie, just like Fido, you know, whatever, you know, so too bad. That's not proper for a human being. That's what the Rebbe says. And he says, Torah also, you got to keep Torah, and you got to really be real about it. Okay, so, fine, we're up to Aleph. Before the 14th, the night of the 14th, you need to clean all the rooms and the houses of your courtyard, all these different areas that you own that might have chametz in them. He said, the one who's cleaning, if it's the woman of the house, or if it's the man of the house, or if it's both, should check carefully all the pockets of garments. Maybe someone left some chametz in there. You left a little morsel in there or something. Because the whole idea of checking is on question. You can't say, well, I don't think I brought chametz in. It's like, maybe. That's the whole idea. It's maybe, so what? And maybe it's gone. Maybe it's just, that's the whole idea of the bdika. That's the point of the bdika. So if there's a maybe, you gotta already check. Okay. People empty pockets? go through the whole wardrobe and empty all the pockets, go through your closet, and every pocket, it used to be, it was easier, right? They had maybe a few garments very often. Now you could have, like, and then with kids, it could be like, well, I think there's 100 pockets, 200 pockets. So Corellis says, if it went through the wash, you probably don't have to empty the pockets, because anything that was likely in there is already, I mean, if you can't have a cake in there, like, you know, unlikely it's anything real. So maybe if you have a hard candy, it could be all three. You have to know if it's not going to be something which you check quickly. If I had a hard candy, I'm folding, I'll see it. I mean, you have to, but it's a problem. The
but normally hard candy is kidneys, at best.
It could be. No, it could be. It's true. I mean, I'm very sad to say that I can't tell you how many times I've gone into a grocery on Pesach. I say, and the guy could be religious. I say, that's, you know, you see these like, what do they call them? Chamtzutzim, right? This like, this is a nice candy, this sweet and sour sticks.
Mm-hmm.
That's based on, you know, that's flour there. That's like, that is the real deal. That's like a roll. Mm-hmm. Puts in the chametz. Well, I don't know if it helps. But like, if you're selling it, it's a whole, I mean, Rosh Shlomo Zalman, very unpleasant question. He had a question of someone. He had vodka. Like, oh, I have a bottle of vodka. Excellent. I'm not going to use it for Pesach, but vodka, what could be wrong with vodka? So, you know, then he heard after Pesach, oh no, there was chametz in the vodka. So, I mean, he didn't drink it. He was happy about that. But like, did I violate the prohibition? I mean, did sell all my chametz. So one big rav wanted to say that, well, it could be, you sold it. And if the non-Jew had won, he could have taken it. So that's okay. We'll see. What does the sale help? What does it mean? What does the time cause of Hashem? But, Rishon Mazal was like, I don't know about that, because if the guy had come and you hadn't known to give it to him and he hadn't known to take it, I mean, it's hard to say it's part of a sale. Like, you didn't know, he didn't know, like, how does it get sold? Because you would have wanted, if you had known, it might not be good enough. If you put it away, it's in your closet in case you want to take a l'chaim, and if maybe the kid, you know, you'd wait till after Pesach. But if someone asks, is that sold? You say, no, there's no chametz in there, no way. That's your mindset. So then who's like, how does it work?
It wasn't included in the sale.
Yeah, how does it work? Especially since we see the sale, what it helps. The minute you start figuring out what it helps, the strongest reasoning why it should help is not applicable. So it's like, so then what did you do with the sale anyway? So it's not so clear. It's a problem. So in short, we have to like make sure.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
There is a nosach of the sale that also includes whatever I forgot.
But it usually means he says you're being machshiv. You're saying no. This I'm saving.
Yeah,
I'm saving
so I
this.
I think it wasn't covered.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, presumably it's a problem.
Right.
And that means like you left something, some roll somewhere,
mm-hmm.
And then you said throw it out. If you forget, you know, if it's not forgetting here. Here it's a premeditated. You just made a big mistake.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So it's very complicated. If you're not sure, you put it, that's why we know people, the Hechsher and the Hechsher. Well, if it's a Hechsher, at least somebody, like, you have some idea. Otherwise, like, you don't even know, you have no idea how we're supposed to know. But I had, like, three times already. I hit a grocery, and I had one time before Pesach, Erev Pesach, and another once or twice, I think twice. It was very unpleasant. The guy was religious, even. He just didn't know. He doesn't know what it is. And he's selling them. It's, like, not fun. Yeah.
So, where do we find kosher Pesach candy, then?
Candy?
Yeah.
Make it.
You have they have you have to just make sure it's got that hechsher on it. You have to badatz. You have to just look. There's so much kosher Pesach candy. I mean, you know, like people, they don't eat any potatoes. They don't eat, like, they don't eat any. There's one guy who came into the yeshiva. He's like, no, well, I wouldn't eat in your house probably because you don't make fish, do you? I mean, fish to me is like chametz. I don't eat any fish because maybe you ate fish chametz. You're right. You can't eat my house. That's true. You're right. You got that one right.
Fish is chametz.
No, it's a chumrah. It's one of the many, many, many big chumras. I mean, to be fair, I forgot which Hasidic master said. He said he was very lenient the rest of the year in halacha, but when he came to Pesach, he was very, very, very strict. And he said, if you're strict on Pesach, then you can. Which he did the main. Again, it's not. That's what he wanted to say. Rav Baruch Mezhbur said that if your Rav Levitz Yitzchak Bender would brought this, I think he liked to say this idea that you should be crying in Nisan that Hashem protects you from chametz. Then you won't have to cry so much on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. You'll be in a different level than you if you don't bother. You have to care. You know, that's part of the chumah. Like, but chametz I didn't eat. Like, hopefully I'm trying. I'm hoping. I'm just anything. I'm just. Again, it has to be with the geshmak. You're not supposed to don't let chumas kill you. You know, chumas, the person says, well, I feel like a weed has, like, something really nice squirted on it, and it's dying. Not so slow. That's this chumra. I'm so afraid. That's not the idea. That's not called. That's not a good chumrah. That's not the way. But a chumrah is supposed to. If it comes from a place of love for Hashem, and it's good for the person, positive. I'm expressing my. I want so much not to mess up. That's like the moral says. I don't want to. When you care for someone, you're going to do everything in your power. If he or she is sleeping, if you need something, you're going to just go out of your way to make the most. I want to go in the house and people come up. They're very sensitive. Like, and you don't have to. You're going way above and beyond because of how much you love the person. So if that's our love of Hashem, so that's how we express our love of Hashem. That certainly applies to Pesach too. But if it's really from love and not from, I don't know what, fear or intimidation or who knows what inside, who knows what. So it has to be from a good place. If it's from a good place, great. But it's, yeah, the chumras, there are a lot of, there definitely are a lot of chumras. So these people, what are they going to eat? Chocolate. I mean, chocolate's kosher. So eat chocolate. Eat, you know, candies. There's so many great candies. Unbelievable. Where in Yerushalayim especially, I remember as a child, Barton's was like the big we sold the Barton's candy. We had like endless boxes of these great candies for Pesach. So Pesach candies was a lot of great stuff. Siyata Nishmar.
The next question is, how do we make it so that our wives do not freak out with Pesach?
That's a very hard question. That's a very hard question. Because people tend to go overboard a little bit when it comes to Pesach. And in a way, it's not so simple. It's not so simple. I mean, sometimes there's somebody who feels like, I just can't do this, it's too much for me. Or the next level, which is, I can maybe do it, but I'll probably have a nervous breakdown. I mean, that's even the worst level. You know, I can do anything, but I don't think I'm going to make it. But you know, I have a little testimony.
The other evening, my wife was telling about what she plans to do and so on. He says, well, I don't. Well, I have to get to do the Trisim. And I stopped her and said, you are not going to do the Trisim. You're not going to scrub the walls. I want you alive to the Seder.
Sometimes a person overdoes it. I mean, sometimes a person overdoes it. It has to be from a good place, and you're not supposed to be overdoing it.
How much is going to be on the walls and the Trisim? Nobody ate on the Trisim. Nobody ate on the walls.
I mean, it's like this. The first thing is to realize that, like the stipler would say to people, you know, for one young man who's a very diligent learner and he's very into things, and he said, I see you're really into learning. Do you ever help at home? And he said, my wife doesn't want me to help. She wants to learn. He said, that's beautiful. That's her mitzvah. But your mitzvah is to make sure it helps. You did not buy a shivcha. She's not your maidservant. I mean, she's your wife. So sometimes maybe the family can help out. Like, it doesn't have to be only her. Only your job. You can do something. If possible, if you can. The person can. If you can't, say, no, I can't. Okay, so don't. But if you can, try to wake people up, try to galvanize. It's important to try to have a positive attitude also. That really helps. Just like be happy and smile and say, wow, this is so wonderful. Like we see now, the Baditshiva would say every single time a person rubs something, scrubs a little chametz or does something, he's creating another angel, a protective angel. So it's very, when you think of it like that, it's like, wow, it's such a merit, it's such a beautiful, another one. You think of it like that, you're doing great, you know. So that's just a matter of attitude. Like, what is my attitude? Like, how do I look at it? How do I view it? How do I perceive it? That's the question. How do I perceive it? How do I... That's really what it comes down to. And it has to do with a lot of joy. It has to do with a lot of simcha. I'm realizing, you know, we're leaving, you know, they have a song that mama put us to work in the kitchen, and then we're free to, the slaves are free to face up, so some sort of song in Hebrew the kids sing. So, you know, I don't think that's what it really means. That's not the idea. It's just to be in a good spirit, in a good way, and not indulging in the negativity there. I mean, you know, Rosh Salanter, someone wants to scream to the matzah, watch out for the matzah, what about this? Screaming, and the guy was very upset. He said, you know, with all due respect, you know, you have to be careful of the chametz and everything, you have to do your best to clean it. It's true, but getting angry at someone is a violation of a Torah command, like, or the basis of the whole Torah. You can't, like, allow yourself to just be in a rage for a couple of days and, like, you know, that's not the idea at all. That's a mistake. It's a fallacy. He said, this is it's a custom. I mean, the cling to such an extent, it's a custom. It's an important custom. It's a beautiful custom, but you can't flip the, you know, you have the essentials, then you have the extras. You can't switch the essentials to the extras. That's a bad idea. That's not a proper cheshem. Fine. So that's, again, this is the baditch. You have to remember, every time I'm cleaning, everything I'm doing, I mean, the chaznish, he was the story I like to tell. I guess I'll tell it again now. But before, I think a few days ago, I think that when they found a bottle of someone left schnapps, or a bottle of chametz, like total chametz. Oh, I found it on the top of the closet. So there was a bunch of boys checking his house for him from the yeshiva. So he said, "Oh, call everyone over." He was such delight. He was so happy. He'll be so much. You have to think like, with this chametz, I feel like I'm gonna collapse. We're almost there. We're almost clean. We didn't clean. We're supposed to be like, it's almost Pesach. You know, shining and alive, and you know, and vibrant and vital. Like that's because it was shining and alive and vibrant and vital. And all the guys come sit down. He poured a little bit of shmaps in prison. Like l'chaim. Almost peso with the chametz. Not to be in a place where the person's. I can't let myself be squeezed. I gotta be happy. I gotta be alive. I gotta be keep my simcha. And you know, again, if we keep it, so we can often give it. That's really what it comes down to. I'm happy and I'm shining. So I'm already. That's already very very good for my house, for my wife, and for my whole family, for everybody. That's what it comes down to. Okay, that's the first tip. So he says, then the beginning of the 14th night, you check for the chametz with the candle after nightfall immediately. Wash your hands first and then make bracha. In terms of the pockets, I'll just say the Mishnah Berurah brings that the custom by Ashkenazim is to people just pull out their pockets and check right when they're burning the chametz or before they burn the chametz on the day, by daytime, they just sort of empty out their pockets. Again, I mentioned if you to wash, if we go through the wash, it could be it's fine. You know what's going to be usually, but he says it's better to do also check the night and also. But again, once you're allowed to put in the closet, you're more or less okay. Fine. So you check. You're supposed to check the 14th. The Chazon Ish did a very thorough checking, and many others were very careful. And it's definitely worthwhile to check. Carefully, if you're not going to have a return to the pay down from it. I mean, you know, the main point of the checking is just to make sure, Shlomo Zalman says, to make sure that things were cleaned well and that they're okay. You don't have to check between the floor furrows, because if they wash the floor, it's okay. You have to check around here and there and see where it was cleaned properly. Okay, so the second sieve, you have to check by the light of a candle, one candle of wax. Shouldn't bring two big ones or intertwined ones, because that's like a torch, and when the one does not check the light of a torch, it doesn't show carefully, and also maybe he'll burn down the house. You're afraid if you're checking too carefully, so that's a problem. Yeah, so the candles one does not check with either there's a simen, chshasha, which means suspicion, chshasha ba'amo, which is chelev, it's forbidden fat. Person afraid to drip on his vessels and make them like now he's got to go crazy. Is it kosher? Isn't it kosher? Like it's probably not, and maybe he can't even kosher it. He can't even make it better. And then shemen is oil, also maybe too strong. Shuman is a meat fat, which again also if it falls on dairy dishes is not good. And avuka is too big a light; you can't really see clearly.
Paraffin,
yeah,
the regular white candles.
Yeah. Paraffin should be fine, I think. I mean, we use wax, and we'll see in a minute. There's a reason why, but our candles that come in those days from Europe are chaylev; they're not permitted, and one should not use them. I don't know if it's maybe it's not kosher paraffin. I'm not sure, but we use shava. I said the Arizal says something very, very beautiful about shava, which is the whole character of Binkas Chametz of checking. He says that shava is shin ayin and then vav hey. Shin ayin. 370 illuminations. When we get to this, we're not going to get into the technical too much. He said, but there's a place you want to get to, you know, when you're feeling wonderful and your face is shining. He said, that's the Shin Ayin Nehorin. 370 lights, you get a little drop of that. So we want to get this 370 illuminations, then we get Vav K, then there's an aspect of the Shem of Hashem. We want to put together the Vav and the Hey. So that's what we want to do, and that's how we do it. We have to light the candle, and it has to be not too strong, exactly according to my level, so I'm able to check. But when I'm checking for the chametz, when I'm checking for the negativity that I really have to work on overcoming, and I have to find, or however you want to say, what chametz is, I have to do it with a lot of joy and illuminated countenance, not feel like this is a task or it's a torture, but it's a privilege and a pleasure, and I'm very happy to do it. That's because like, I'm getting rid of it. That's the idea. Okay, so that third. You have to check in the hidden crevices in the different openings you might have in your house, any place where it's normal to bring hobbits in. The person should say, "Oh, I can't stand this." I think he feels like he just wants to finish it. It's such a coats like he's disgusting. Don't be disgusted by the Badika. Even though you have to work really hard. The person's walls might not be painted and made up of these little stones. He's got kids in the house and good luck finally yeah, finding like the really good things. He's gotta sit all day. It's really a question of hobbits. And if no doesn't even have maybe anything on covering it, it's just crevices, a million crevices, you gotta check all these crevices. Because this mitzvah is very great, and in accordance with how hard you work, that's the reward. He said, and check any place where you can put things and can receive things. Right? Like the shelves and the walls, whatever it may be, you have to check the little ones. If you forgot, or you had no choice, don't forget, you had an onus, you couldn't do it by the night. So then check immediately by day. After davening, after he davens the morning prayers, and you should check with a candle, unless it's directly near a window, which is a different point. But, so in a place which is like a porch without a roof, so you can check it without a candle. But you certainly shouldn't wait for it. Okay. So, first of all, in terms of, he says you're don't worry about the effort of Badika. Like I said before, the Chazanish was very careful about the Badika when he had people helping him. One time someone said, like, I mean, Rebbe, you really have to work, like, look like, work so hard to search out. I mean, like, this little is just maybe too much. I'm doing so much here. So he said, you know, our sages say even after the Badika, you have to nullify the Chametz in your heart. Why? Because maybe you'll find a nice cake that you might eat or might not even not need. You might just say, well, you know, maybe I'll have that. You say, no, it's Pesach. And that second, you violate the prohibition to Chametz because you didn't say, you nullify it, so you don't violate the prohibition. He said, so you see that even after you check very thoroughly, there might be something. You gotta, presumably, you really have to check seriously. And that night, they found a little cake actually somewhere. So he said, you see that? That's what I'm talking about. You have to be very careful of that. You know, it's not so simple. Rabbi Nachman said that part of the search for Chametz, part of the eradication of Chametz, is negative thoughts. Negative thoughts. And negative thoughts bring a person to being depressed. I have to have good thoughts. I have to bring myself out and have positive thoughts so I'm able to be happy. So I'm holding myself back. This is the person has, Rav Nosson explained, the person has, he has all sorts of things going on. Maybe he wants, I don't know, he's desperate for, I don't know, what exactly, ice cream. One guy maybe wants his Ferrari. He wants, I don't know, his airplane. I don't know who exactly. Everyone has certain things they want. Which if you ask them, do you think this is really conducive to a spiritual life? I mean, it might be the answer to that. Not really. This is a little bit the opposite of spiritual life. So these sort of things we have to let go of. Get our thoughts off them and get our thoughts more on connecting to Hashem, what's real. That's what's genuine. Anything else is not going to be real. It's not going to be genuine. So that's an important thing to be aware of. When we're doing the Badika, I have to search out my thoughts. I want to change my thoughts. Illuminate my thoughts. See, what am I thinking and why? And like a It's obvious. The thought patterns bring us wherever we need to go. And wherever we find ourselves, if I find myself depressed, well, that's my thoughts doing it. You know, it's not him, it's not her, it's not this, it's not that. It's just me. That's what it comes down to. So I have to get my thoughts in order so I don't let them take me off to some place which is just torture for me. It's a pity to do that. So you light the little candle and you say, I'm stopping this. I'm getting rid of the hummus, but like, I'm not going to be blow things up anymore. No, thank you. Simple. Just simple. It's okay, everything's the way it should be. I appreciate the good in every person, especially if you're close to me, and say, you know, there's going to be some response here. I'm not blown up. And then it happened, and everything's good. Okay. The fourth sif, the fourth paragraph. You shouldn't start any malacha, any work, and you shouldn't eat until you check. Have a little taste of fruit, or a less than egg size of bread is permitted before you check if you need it. And if you, even if you have a time that's set aside to learn, you shouldn't learn until you check. Unfortunately, although we're not allowed to learn unless it's an exact amount, like dafayomi, for example, you can learn a particular amount, especially if it's ashir. But if it's without any amount, it can be that you're really not supposed to learn. Unfortunately, the reason behind it doesn't apply to most people, usually, which is sad, but true. The Shulchan Aruch says, you know, you open a sefer, you're learning the Holy Torah. Then you turn around and it goes, could be day. So you missed the time. So you're not allowed to, you can't learn. I guess unfortunately most people are not really holding there. But you still shouldn't do it anyway, but you shouldn't wait. You might forget. You might, but like, it's like, he's like, you know, of course, you're going to spend all night. What do you mean? There's a story with Rav Aaron Strahart's. He opened the Qumran. He's like, I'll learn the Qumran. The night of the Seder. The night of, sorry, the King's Chametz. And so I was like, are you coming to davening? And it's like, what davening? It's like morning. Like 8 hours later, it's Shacharis, like whatever hours later. It's like, whatever, you know, that's how we're supposed to learn. That's what we're supposed to be holding. All of us, we were there. This one says Mekor Chaim here. Mekor Chaim says we have to realize what is the Bedikas Chametz. Bedikas Chametz is our way of destroying that. We are removing any vestige of klipa of the negativity, negative spiritual content, or whatever you want to say, the spirituality on me and in my life and my house. So you have to like have a certain continuity with it. Now is the time you could do it. You can't do it now. So don't be involved in things that are not gonna they're gonna get in your way. That's not the way it's supposed to be. That's not what I should be doing. Okay, here it is. Yeah. He said, listen, malacha, when you do work, it's very, like Rebbe says, even though you can reveal spirituality in work, it's harder. It's not so easy. So, you know, you have to, Mekor Chaim, he says, so to be involved in work is not such a good idea. It's just like on Shabbos and Yom Tov, it's not a time. He said, this is not a time either. I'm trying to get rid of the bad. I should not be involved in something that can easily distract me from my purpose. He said, that is working. And guess what? Food too distracts one from Hashem, distracts one from his purpose. So that's not. Don't be involved in either of these things till you're done with the bedika. That's how he explains. He says there are 39 curses. That's why there's 39 different types of work of halachic labor, and that's basically any creative thing you're going to do. You're going to hit something about usually, and that's this idea that we have to find the 39 illuminations and change it around through Shabbos, through doing Yom Yomtiv and connecting to Hashem and serving Hashem and working on purifying myself when I do the malacha. I mean, there were Bresser or Chassidim who did their labor in such a holy way. We hear about it, like, wow, that is unbelievable. The guy who spent every day many hours working wood and every process he had down pat to just cry and do his blood and just please, like, get rid of my rough edges. You know, he had a whole nusach, like, the whole day. And so that was what he did. You know, he's crying as he's doing his good work. Like this. That's what we want to get to. Most people, though, it's a little harder than it's not quite so easy. So better to do your bedikah first. It's the saving food as well.
You were saying 39 curses?
Yeah. Adam Arishan, Adam was cursed. You will work for your livelihood. Now, that curse actually was a blessing, too. Because he said, I don't want a freebie now. If I'm serving you in the spiritual level, great. But if I'm not on the level to serve you, I don't want to get it free. That's not what I'm going to. I'm going to eat from the same trough as my donkey? Like, I mean, that's not right. And that's the way it comes out of the Arizal, the Chamor specifically picked, because Chamor alludes to Chomrius. That's material. He said, if I'm going to be immersed in the material world, I want to be. I want it to be hard. I want it to be easy. Hard. Let it be hard. So that. At least to break my arrogance, at least to break something. It's not easy. You learn how to, you know, you can't just sit in bed and it comes to you. You gotta. So Hashem gave it to him. So that in a way, it was a favor, but in a way, it's also very distracting. It's very hard. But it would have been much worse, just more distracting if we could have just sat around and, like, you know, like the fox in the field, we'd find our food, like the forage somehow, and get the food together, which Hashem could have easily, like, you know, for him, it's nothing. So, like, please don't do that to me. I'll never get anywhere that way. No one will ever get anywhere. I said, no, okay, so you work hard. And as we come close to Mashiach, we work a little less hard, usually, but we have to find ourselves, and we're not just idle, usually, and that's a positive development. But anyway, the work is hard to do it in a way that's going to be spiritual, and I'm going to be able to remember I have to remove the chametz, so don't do work now. And I said, food is the same thing. Now, he said, you want to put your table in front of Hashem? He said, first, get rid of the chametz. He said, food is lechem, is like the Zohar says, from the language of lochem. It means combat, fighting, because it's a fight. How much do I eat? How do I eat? How's my breakfast? What am I doing? All of these are challenges, big challenges. That's the Zohar. That's the idea. So we have to work and say, I'm gonna not the biggest challenge to leave alone the food. Like leave alone the food. I don't have to fast, but right now, just leave it out of the way. It's not conducive. That's how he explains. Anyway, so we're done. Tomorrow we'll continue.